We are going to talk about how having science and reason only as a foundation for morality just simply doesn't work. This is Matthew Garnett. Welcome to In Layman's Terms.
So I can give you when human life starts. As a biologist, there's no other answer than with fertilization. Then life starts.
Now, I hate to say I told you so, but what the Democrats are coming out with their abortion agenda, demonstrates to you exactly what I've been talking about this past some months, about how if you try to build a foundation, if you try to build morality on the foundation of naturalistic materialism, you get some really disgusting results. One of those results we saw, see, this is what the Enlightenment people don't want to admit. You've got guys like Steven Pinker out there running around talking about how, oh, Enlightenment now and how things are so much better than they were before. Well, what they ignore, this is really what bothers me about people's analysis, is it's very one-sided. So you've got the Howard Zinn types out there talking about the people's history of the United States and how it was so terrible that we had slavery and that we dominated the natives of the land and took their land for ourselves and these sorts of things. And that was terrible. Those were atrocities. Those were immoralities by our standards today. In that day and time, that's how things were done. It was conquest. It was a conquest model. Now, what Howard Zinn won't tell you is that the Western world, particularly the United States and England, were the first to abolish those immoral models of conquest and colonization and slavery based on, yes, Enlightenment values now come to the front where we understand our Bibles. We as individuals are able to read our Bibles and understand that, hey, this is not what the Bible teaches. This is not what we're to be going out and doing. Howard Zinn won't tell you that side of the story. Steven Pinker won't tell you the other side of the story, which the Enlightenment led to the French Revolution, World War I, World War II, and so on and so forth, particularly World War II, and the eugenics program. Makes perfect sense to me. If all you are reasoning from is a naturalistic, materialistic worldview, then why not exterminate the lesser types of humans so we evolve into a higher state of human being? That makes complete sense. And people bought into this. So now, instead of euthanizing, say, Down syndrome adults, or black people, or Jews, because they are an inferior race, and we need to get rid of them in order to bring about the master race, we are, in fact, exterminating people before they are born. Particularly at the highest rate of extermination are black people. And probably a fair mix of 50-50 women, men. So we are eliminating men. So all these people groups that pro-abortionists would side with, they are persecuting and oppressing through abortion. That many countries in the world are aborting babies who are diagnosed with Down syndrome. They're seeing their Down syndrome numbers go down. And so this is what you get when you base your morality strictly from a materialistic, naturalistic worldview with no revelation in sight. And to demonstrate that point, let me play you a clip from Delegate Kathy Tran of Virginia.
So how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking about your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make.
I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Okay, so do you understand that when Delegate Tran is talking about the woman's health, essentially what she's saying is that if a woman could be dilating and she could, in theory, claim that this baby is giving her mental distress and she wants it aborted at that point, and with the consent of one doctor, murder that child coming out of the womb. But why not? Why not, when all you have is a materialistic, naturalistic worldview? There's no reason to value something like a life that can't contribute to the rest of society. A baby can't really contribute. It's going to take away. It's going to be a complete consumer. And so why value that? If it's not something you want to give to, then why should you be forced to do it? And Peter Singer, a bioethicist at Princeton, as many of you might know, goes even further to say that until the child can really start contributing to society, you know, it's perfectly allowed to terminate that life. Same thing at the end of life, when you become no longer functional and useful, and really all you can do is consume and take from others, you're allowed, you know, you should be allowed to have yourself euthanized. So, but that's, you know, that's where things are taken. And by the way, somebody with a naturalistic, materialistic worldview would say, yeah, exactly. And that's how we want it. That's why we don't want your revelation dictating terms here. We're glad that we don't have your revelation dictating terms, because we don't want to be beholden to your God's morals on this. We want to make up our own morals on this. Okay. But the problem with it is abortion is not something that is just merely a matter of our God's morals. Incidentally, there's nothing in the second table of the Ten Commandments which deal with human-to-human interactions, how we deal with our neighbors, that are purely just religious taboo stuff. See, a lot of people think that that Christians or religious people have a problem with homosexual activity because it's a religious taboo. That is not true. Talked about that many times here, but we're talking about abortion today. If you can't see, even as a person who has a naturalistic, materialistic worldview, how murdering a baby as it is coming out of a woman's dilated womb at the behest of the woman claiming I'm going to have mental problems or whatever she might claim at that time, if you don't see something wrong with that, even when you don't have a Christian worldview, we're really going far afield from natural law. I just think we've gone to the other end. We've just got a Holocaust on the other end. Instead of killing people based on, you know, ethnicity and so on and so forth, it's just easier to do things this way. Start at the beginning. Let's kill them off beforehand. And it's completely irrational. It makes no sense. So, and I struggle to even describe, even to come up with words to explain this. how, again, Delegate Tran is going to say to me, I think that should be perfectly acceptable, that if the woman feels that her mental health is in danger and that baby's coming out, that we should be able to terminate that baby. And I say, no, I don't. I think that's really, that's wrong. I think that's murder. She's going to be like, so what? That child, whatever it is, isn't as important as the woman's mental health. And who gets to decide? Who gets to decide? Who has the authority? The lawmakers? You know, so we can pass a, so as long as it's a law, then it's moral? I don't think so. That's when morality becomes completely subjective and not objective. And that's when, you know, if you're going to sign on to something like this, I'm kind of like, well, where's the boundaries now at this point? Where do we find any objective morality from a naturalistic worldview? So this is why Sam Harris is just wrong about this. You cannot find any objective morality apart from the revelation of God. You cannot. Now, let's listen to Governor Northam support Delegate Tran's ideas here.
If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion.
So a couple things there. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. The infant would be kept comfortable, and then a discussion would ensue as to what? Whether or not the child gets to live? And third, this is blown out of proportion. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe in our day and time, this is really no big deal. Killing babies, we've been doing it for a long time. What's the big deal? I mean, we're going to draw the line right, really, at crossing the breach of the womb. That's just where we're going to arbitrarily draw the line. That's where we're going to make our laws. Does it make it moral? At any rate, that's where we are in this day and time. But do not miss the larger point here. The larger point is that when you don't have morality that is objective, that is from God, not from man. See, Governor Northam here can make a law saying that it's perfectly fine to murder a baby as it's being born. He can make that legal, but he cannot make it moral. Delegate Tran can come up with legislation saying, you know, these things are moral. Our better, you know, moral philosophers like Peter Singer can tell us what's morally ethical. But at the end of the day, that is completely subjective morality. It's not objective. We need an outside source here. We need God's voice. I've pounded this message over and over again because this is what results when you don't have a genuinely objective moral standard. There are consequences to this. This is not just, oh, you know, we want to protect our religion. You know, we're trying to protect our ground. It's none of that nonsense. This is what happens. Now, God works all things together for good to those who love Him. The only possible good I can see coming out of this is so horrifying to people that they wake up and see that this is precisely what the Nazis did to Jews. Except they're turning it around and they're doing it before they're even born. That's precisely what's going on. All right, let's take a breath for a second. Talk about our Can You Well project. A good thing. Trying to help babies, help children grow up and be educated. Please donate to our Can You Well project. I've got to get with Monica and the people and kind of see what's going on this year, how we're going to do some things. I've got some things kind of in the hopper for ideas. Might try having a public debate maybe in Fort Wayne with an atheist or somebody else where we can charge money to raise money for. So I've got some ideas going on there, but really, I don't need to do any of that. I'm a very, very busy person. I would love to do something like that. It'd be fun to raise money for our project here. But what would be even better is if you just gave your $50 or signed up for our monthly donation program. So it's not that difficult. Just treat it like a Band-Aid. Rip it off quick. Give your $50. Let's get this well drilled and get fresh water to these children in Kenya. Also, thank you to KNNA The Cross. Hello to everyone this week on KNNA. Thanks for hosting us out there. And this hopefully will be kind of the final, the closing statements on having revelation, having an outside objective standard of morality by which we should all abide. That doesn't necessarily mean we make laws, but that means that we as a culture decide we need an objective standard here. And all of this abortion nonsense in Virginia demonstrates that. And to further demonstrate that, I'm going to walk through a lecture at the from the Veritas Forum at MIT called Drawing the Line, a discussion between Stanford neurobiologist William Herbert and MIT genetic biologist Rudolf Janczyk. They discuss the ethics of gene editing, and this really is quite germane to our discussion today. I'm going to focus mostly on the end of their discussion, although I'm going to bring in part of their individual lectures, but at the end they kind of discuss the ramifications of all this, and that's really where we're going to focus our time to kind of talk about how this plays into where do we get our morals? From what foundation are we to get our morals? How do we find objective morals? And again, why that is extremely crucial at this point in time.
So let me come to my final slide. So why should you do this? So disease prevention, Tay-Sachs, Huntington's, I mentioned sickle cell, that could be you eliminate these disease genes from the next generation. But you should consider the alternatives. I mean, you can, if you don't want a Huntington's baby, you could make pre-implantation genetic diagnosis and select the embryo which doesn't have the mutation. Very safe. And it's used in the clinic. And somatic therapy, as I said. But there may be no alternative whatsoever. Because, for example, if you're homozygous, if the parents are homozygous for, let's say, Huntington's, or both parents are homozygous for a recessive disease, there's no way they can have a genetically normal child. So this might be the only possibility. And if there's infertility with this Y chromosome linked, would be similar. So that's disease prevention, modifying disease risk genes. So could you make babies who would be resistant to virus infection by inactivating the HIV receptor? Trivial, scientifically. Or all the other genes to affect your incidence of Alzheimer's or heart disease or cancer. Enhancement. Should you do more muscle in your offspring, eye color, learning, memory? And, of course, these are very complex traits. So these are the issues you can consider. And I think the point which we probably today discuss, what is permissible, what's not permissible. This is obviously not a scientific issue. That's something which society would have to decide. And I think
this is something that society would have to decide. Now, at least Janczyk here is honest. Whereas, again, I like to pick on Sam Harris. He's just, I listen to him all the time, so I know where he's coming from on this. This is not something that Sam Harris would leave to the general public to just kind of decide on their own. They would get a bunch of philosophical ethicists together and decide, and they would come up with the decision on, you know, where do we draw the line here? And we would not include theologians in this. No theologians allowed in an ethical discussion. It would take a bunch of ethicists, maybe some scientists, take the data they have, philosophize about it, and come up with a moral standard. That's essentially what Sam Harris wants to do. And if they decide that it's perfectly okay to, when a woman is pregnant, if we can correct the genes to make a baby that's going to have an IQ of 100 have an IQ of 220 or higher, then we can do that. We can make the baby taller, shorter, more muscular. We can do all these designer babies is what we're talking about doing. Now, the guys are honest here that we're a long ways from being able to actually do this with gene editing and predict the outcome. I think this is a lot like the AI thing. I believe in God. I believe there is one God, and we are not Him. The AI thing will run into a roadblock that they can't explain. And the same thing will happen with gene editing. Yes, they may be able to cure certain diseases, so on and so forth, with gene editing. But at the end of the day, they'll run into a roadblock, hopefully, where we won't get to this point. Because why not? Because wouldn't any ethicist, bioethicist, say that it would be immoral to allow your child to be born anything less than perfect? And if that child is born less than perfect, we should be able to terminate that baby, as the good governor of Virginia just discussed with us. Even after birth. He's talking about, if you missed it, he was talking about infanticide there. Keep the baby comfortable, then have a discussion of whether or not we want to kill it if it's deformed. Yeah, your baby comes out with green eyes instead of blue. Oh, somebody messed up the gene editing app. Kill that one off. You see the horrors that come from this. And we're going to decide as a society where this stops? I don't think that's a good idea. Because again, we're talking about eugenics. This is a eugenics program. It's just done with modern enlightenment technology. Yes, Steven Peaker, things are so much better now. Better in what way? That we can decide what color our children's eyes are going to be? And if they're not the right color, maybe we can decide as a society that it's perfectly fine to terminate that person because their eyes aren't the right color? We can decide? Yeah. I think that's very, very difficult. And this gets very, very dicey when your only resource is, especially naturalistic materialism. I think when that particularly is your resource, then you've got a problem. You could do better at least by saying, okay, let's consider some natural law arguments here. That might get you a little closer, but it's not going to get you all the way to where revelation comes. But you see what I'm talking about here. We as a society are going to decide where it is this is going to stop. And this is on a video, and it's interesting. He's got a green light over on one side where we're going to genetically edit to cure diseases, and he's got a red light on the other side where we're going to genetically edit to get stronger children, taller children, children with a certain eye color, etc., etc. We're going to have these designer babies, you know. That where do we decide where it stops? And he's got a big question mark up there, and his answer is, well, we as a society are just going to have to decide where this stops. And the argument's going to come, well, China doesn't care whether or not our ethics don't allow for this. They're going to pursue this, and they're going to have a superior race, and they're going to come, yeah, so what if they do? We're going to sacrifice this. Yeah, this stuff gets very, very dicey. You see what I'm saying? This is the whole point with, you know, with when Sam Harris talks about, and others talk about, human flourishing. Okay, that doesn't cut it, Sam. Sorry. Define that. Define what you mean by human flourishing. See, and then when you get into the specifics like this is where kind of the horrific, very scary stuff comes out. Okay, Let's jump over to Dr. Hurlbut and see what his response to this is.
15 years ago, a stem cell biologist named Dawa Salter raised this issue. He said you could have millions of gametes, you could combine them, and today we can't do those experiments on human embryos because it's considered morally repugnant. They're difficult to get. But if embryos could be grown in culture like any other cell line, this latter problem would disappear. They'd be easy to get. They'd become like any other cell type. They would become objects and would be used as objects. And then he went on to say, I have no idea what kind of moral value or rights we would give these embryos. We'll probably go through the same agonizing we did with IVF. It could be terribly difficult to begin with, but then would become a fact of life. 20, 30 years from now, we might read in the papers, somebody made 20,000 embryos, studied their development, and we'll decide it's okay.
Right, this is what I was talking about when I was talking about eugenics. The Nazis did experiments on scientific experiments on human beings because they devalued life. A Jew, we can do scientific experiments on them because they're not really human. They're rats, cockroaches, as some in our society say today. We can do experiments on them. Human embryos? Well, we're not sure when, honestly, Dr. Yanish, and I've been mispronouncing his name, forgive me. Dr. Yanish is going to go on in the discussion section of this to say that life begins at conception. No doubt about it. The real debate is, what value does that life have? Shocking statement. Life begins at conception. So we have a life here by Dr. Yanish's admission. He's going to admit that later. Like I say, we're going to play the discussion that ensues. We have life here, but that life is so valueless that we can just use it as objects. Now, if that doesn't sound Naziistic to somebody, I just don't have an answer for you. We're just not talking from the same, and that's the thing is we are not addressing these issues from the same worldview. We're not. And there's going to be consequences to this when we don't address issues from the same worldview. Yeah, now, at the end of the day, yes, in a liberal democracy, we as a society decide what's legal and illegal. We do. The real question is what worldview are we going to make these determinations from? And so, again, this whole thing with in vitro fertilization where you've got however many fertilized eggs that you have available to implant into a woman that hopefully will result in a pregnancy, and most of them don't make it to term. But yet, Dr. Yanish is going to tell us life begins at conception. But we don't value that life. For what reason? On what basis? Maybe we need a little help here. Maybe we could involve the theologians in this discussion. See, scientists are terrible theologians most of the time. Terrible philosophers. They don't do well with these things. But yet, because we don't think religion has anything to offer, particularly Christianity or even Judaism, to the discussion, they get cut out of the thing. And, people who are pro-life are just seen as, oh, you just want to protect your religious taboos. That's really what this is all about. At the end of the day, is protecting religious taboos. And this is what results. Got Delegate Tran saying, baby's being born, mother decides that for whatever reason, really, my mental health is going to be affected by this. Kill the baby. Not too far from, didn't come out with the right eye color. Yeah, let's get rid of that one. We'll do another one. Harrowing stuff, I would say, to be sure. And again, don't miss the bigger picture here. What are we looking at? We're talking about subjective moral values versus objective moral values. Dr. Yanish is proceeding from the notion that all we have is subjective moral values, and we get to decide what those are. And when God's law written on our hearts tells us that this is some sort of horror, we're just to ignore that. Because, yeah, it may seem like a horrific thing, but don't think about it too much, you know, just, you know. And the rest of the society is going to tell you it's okay, so we're just going to sear our consciences with the approval of the rest of society. That's how a lot of things work. You know, alcoholics like to be around other people, other alcoholics, because it makes them feel like, you know, even though they know what they're doing is wrong, they like to have other people around them doing the same thing because it makes them feel better about their sin. It's kind of the same thing. Oh, everybody in society thinks this is okay. Well, it's going to make me feel better about what I'm doing, even if it is wrong. So at any rate, pretty interesting, the scientist that Dr. Hulbert is citing here, talking about, you know, this is Sam Harris's contention. We really need to get to the point where we can use fertilized embryos to do medical research. Yeah, they're human beings. There's life there. But we need to get to the point where society just accepts these things as objects so we can get our research on. Because there's much bigger things we've got to accomplish here, you know, despite the fact that we're using human life in this way. And again, this kind of discussion is really down in the weeds with, you know, scientific jargon, and we're just talking about embryos, we're talking about a petri dish full of cells. But we saw from the delegate and from the governor earlier where this all leads. And it doesn't lead to a pretty place. It's eugenics, folks. This is eugenics done with modern science, based on subjective morals. This is where subjective morals get you. I want to beat that drum this entire podcast. So for those of you who don't understand why it is we need revelation and why it is we need the authority of God to tell us, no, that's wrong. Don't care what excuses you want to make for trying to do it. It's wrong. Don't do it. Trust me, I'm God. So, you know, that's where we're going with this. Okay, let's continue on.
So you can see huge issues. And then, of course, the very, very difficult one is, will we allow research on embryos beyond 14 days? And if so, for how long? And according to what principles or moral valuations? In the United Kingdom, they allow embryo research up to 14 days. But now that they can actually keep them alive longer than 14, there's a huge controversy going on about whether they should revise that rule and allow it to go on. There was just an article in Nature Biotechnology 2 months ago about this big debate going on. And this scientist at the Francis Crick Institute is already doing studies of developmental biology with human embryos. So there's going to be a big controversy over this, probably an international controversy, and it's going to be difficult. Now, would anybody really want to go beyond 14 days? Well, my colleague at Stanford was on the California State Commission on Human Cloning, and somebody asked him why they drew the line at 14 days. And he said, oh, that's just the first limit, just so people get used to it. And we could change our ideas about how long in the future based on likely changes in our understanding of neuroscience. Well, what does neuroscience have to do with it? And, of course, what's gravitating slowly but surely is the notion that you're a human being, and it only when you're conscious, self-reflective, and so forth. So
what Dr. Hurlbut is talking about here is, in the UK, they're allowed to do this research. I don't think in the United States we're allowed to do research on embryos. I could be wrong. I don't know the laws on that. But the point is, in the UK, you're allowed to do research on embryos. They're very difficult to get, but the embryos can't be any older than 14 days. Normally, I guess from what I understand from Dr. Hurlbut, they don't last much longer than that. But, you know, let's say, for instance, we get to a point in the future where, I mean, this might be a slippery slope argument, but I don't think so. I think this is a logical progression. If we can gene edit for eye color, let's say a woman has a baby that's born with green eyes instead of blue. You know, I want to kill that thing off. And they'll say, okay, well, you just sign this paper, you turn it over to us, then we do experiments on it. I mean, what kind of things could we learn if we could do experiments on human beings that are, you know, not really human beings? And we think we're going to unravel the mysteries of consciousness with neuroscience. That might happen, but it hasn't happened so far. And the thing I always turn back to with this is, you know, whether embryo or baby coming out of the womb, where do we decide where life begins? Where do we decide when something is human? Well, how about we apply this standard, just the standard of doubt. If you come up on a person that looks like they're dead, but you're not quite sure, you thought you felt the pulse, you might have heard them breathe, or that sort of, you know, that sort of thing. Do you just like, well, that person's probably dead, I'll just abandon them, you know, I'll go call the police, you know, I'm not going to worry about it too much, but I'm not going to try to help them because they're already dead. There's no real urgency here. Or do you rush to pull out your cell phone and call 911 when there's doubt? If there's any chance the person might be alive, you just leave them for dead? Of course not. You would never do that. Same question we have with embryos. And again, Dr. Ganesh is going to come along and say that life begins at conception. Okay? Then the question comes, well, when do they really become a human being? That's a question. Okay, fine. We can put that question out there. Maybe an embryo really isn't a human being, but we don't know for sure. Yet we want to proceed as if we know for sure that an embryo is not, it might be life, but it's not a human being. That makes no logical sense. They're breaking their own rules here. And again, a little objective, divine revelation would really help in this situation.
This is going to be another very difficult debate. And would anybody do this? Well, I debated this guy, Julian Savulescu, some years ago at a forum in New York City. And he said that not only would it be okay to do it, we have it morally required to produce clones, implant them, and harvest them for the cells, tissues, or even organs. I asked him, how long would you let it gestate before you harvest it? This guy's a physician, by the way, and a head of a bioethics think tank at Oxford. And he said, I said, 6 months? He said, yes, I'd go 6 months. So there's going to be controversy. And Erwin Chargaff, who was a major figure in early genetic technologies, warned us that we're going to have to face these profound questions as biotechnology advances. He warned us that the time was coming when there would be useful cells, tissues, and possibly even organs that could be extracted from human beings, early human beings, like we currently take, like at one point they extracted gold teeth. So I don't want to sound pessimistic about that. I don't know any scientists that have terrible scenarios, except for a few that are like that guy, Julian Savulescu. But nonetheless, there are different cultures and different nations. And I gave a talk in China a year ago.
Okay, you guys can't see this because it's on his screen, but here's Erwin Chargaff, the scientist he's talking about here. And the quote he has up there says, "Science is now the craft of the manipulation, substitution, and deflection of the forces of nature. What I see coming is a gigantic slaughterhouse, an Auschwitz, in which valuable enzymes, hormones, and so on will be extracted instead of gold teeth." And I could not agree more. That's the direction all of this insanity and barbarity takes us. Sam Harris, you think the Bible is barbaric? This stuff is barbaric. We just do it scientifically. It's astonishing, isn't it? Solomon was correct when he taught us there's nothing new under the sun, that our barbarity may be couched and camouflaged in our modern science and our notions of enlightenment. But at the end of the day, we always figure out a way to be barbaric. We always find a way to be sinful. And we always find a way to justify it. And Chargaff is exactly right here. And that's my sentiment as well. I'd forgotten about this quote. But this is a Holocaust. Again, where the Holocaust victims had their gold teeth extracted, we're going to have a slaughterhouse of babies where their enzymes, hormones, stem cells, these things are extracted. It's frightening stuff.
Right. So I think they are very complex questions, which I'm unable to answer. I have an opinion on those, but I can't answer them.
So you mentioned drawing a line at when these technologies affect humans.
Yes.
And Bill, in your talk, you discussed there's differing views on when does human life start. And so I guess I'm curious in hearing you guys discuss a little bit around that issue. So when do we have a human? When do we go from cells to a human?
So I can give you when human life starts. As a biologist, there's no other answer than with fertilization. Then life starts. I mean, this is not the question which is interesting. The question is interesting. When do you consider a human embryo as being worth to be protected against whatever? That's, I think, is the key question, not when life starts. I find this a wrong question. Fertilization, what else can you say? But this doesn't mean that the fertilized egg is untouchable. To me, that is, and I think the compromises we have made, the Britons had made as a first country, that you can use fertilized human embryos to make embryonic stem cells, I fully support, with the clear-cut restriction they had. So that was after life began, of course. You had an embryonic stem cell. You had a blastocyst, which you, after 7 days, put in a culture dish, you make an embryonic stem cells. So I find this the right decision, the British did first. And we have done it in my laboratory. We have generated human embryonic stem cells under the right conditions. And I don't see that this as something which I find problematic for me.
What's your
perspective? Rudy, let me just ask you about that. How do you feel about the controversy in England to carry it beyond 14 days?
So I think I would differentiate a lot. If it's 14 days beyond implantation, right? So the British made a very clear rule. You can do something with a cleavage embryo, with an embryo which grows in a culture dish, up to 14 days. And then you have to make an embryonic stem cells. But once the embryo is implanted, so implantation is a red line. Once it's implanted, you can't touch it. And I would think that is really a good line because there's no gray zone. Either you implant or you don't implant. There's nothing half, right? So now comes the problem with embryos, human embryos being grown in a culture dish beyond 14 days. And there's no experiments published. You can use embryonic stem cells or mouse embryos, but you can grow in a culture dish up to the primitive streak stage. So when they do get an axis, symmetry, and get a beating heart, that can be done without outside of the uterus. No. So this is, of course, it's a very new development. So this line, the British line, might eventually be getting a little more fuzzy, right? I agree with that. You can make these human embryos, embryo-like constructs from embryonic stem cells, which, of course, it doesn't involve an embryo, but you get an embryo-like structure in culture. Now, is that different from when you make the same structure from an embryo than from embryonic stem cells? I wonder. So these are, I think, interesting issues. For me, manipulation of an embryo in utero, for whatever reason, if it's therapeutic, I would support it. If it is for research or for manipulating, I think then it's a really very complex, and I would have a lot of hesitation.
So if you could develop an artificial endometrium in a lab and grow, implant the embryo and grow it to 20 or 30 days?
It raises very complex issues.
Yeah.
Very complex issues.
So this is what I mean when I say that scientists make great scientists, but are terrible ethicists, philosophers, and theologians. Why should I listen to Dr. Ganesh tell me when he thinks it's okay to experiment on human life? Whether it's in a petri dish or in a woman's body. on what authority is he giving me that proclamation? It's completely arbitrary. You see how this is completely arbitrary? This is why, you know, Sam Harris's human flourishing argument just holds no water with me. Get specific, Sam. Can we experiment on human embryos when Janisch clearly pointed out that life begins at conception? There's no doubt about that scientifically. Human life begins at conception. Those embryos he's got in the Petri dish, he would say, yep, that's human life. But my feeling is we can experiment on that up to 14 days. Implantation, if they're implanted, bets are off. Can't touch it. But if we can keep these embryos alive past 14 days, now the line gets more fuzzy. You see how arbitrary this is? I'm just going to pick out a time when I think it's right or wrong to experiment on human beings. That's exactly what he's doing here. Dr. Janisch clearly stated that human life begins at conception. There's just no arguing that. The question is, when are we allowed to experiment on human beings? How long? If they're Jewish, if they're black, Asian, Mongoloid, if they have Down syndrome, we've already decided that that's not ethical. How? Now, I'll grant that I think Dr. Janisch is drawing on God's law written in his heart. He knows that experimenting on human beings for scientific purposes is unethical. He knows that. Because of natural law. But, see, natural law only takes you so far. It doesn't get you to the specifics. And thus, it becomes arbitrary. And so we're going to have a genetic biologist tell us what's ethical. That's completely arbitrary and subjective. We need something objective. That's the point. And Dr. Hurlbut asks him the exact right question. Well, if we can do experiments beyond 14 days where these babies, start to have heartbeats, start to form symmetry, how long are we allowed to experiment on human beings? See, we wouldn't accept this otherwise. We would not accept somebody saying, this person is a lesser human being, therefore we're allowed to experiment on them. We would not accept that logic. But yet, unfortunately, that's the logic that Dr. Janisch is putting forth. And I see how it's tempting to scientists because they think they can gain all this valuable understanding from things. But look, folks, you're going to die. We're never going to be able to outrun death. And at some point we have to say, okay, even though maybe we could make some discoveries and prolong life in some way, shape, manner, or form, or cure this disease perhaps, at some point we have to say, no, what our divine authority teaches us is that experimenting on human beings, no matter what, is wrong. It's wrong. It's unethical. It's immoral. And that's what Janisch is pointing out is, why draw the line at 14 days? Hurlbut's pointing out, why draw the line at 14 days? Why not 30 or 45 or more if we can keep these embryos alive long enough to continue experimenting on them? Who gets to draw that line? Interesting questions. And again, I draw it back to the analogy of the injured person you come upon. You're not quite sure if they're alive. How about if we call it human life, we just don't experiment on it? That's what Holy Scripture would teach us.
George Church at Harvard has published a paper on what he called sheaves, synthetic human-like entities, embryo-like entities. And he says that the 14-day rule was interesting when it was just going from the beginning and working up through natural development. But now with the new tools of developmental biology, you can create later cell types, join them, and they self-organize to the level that you can actually get cerebral tissues. and brain tissues. And he's asking the question, which doesn't really have an easy answer, when does this have some kind of intrinsic dignity? Because most people do believe that what endows human life with dignity has to do with something to do with our neurologic system, obviously. And the question is, well, could we create anything in the dish even if we didn't come up from the bottom, but just, you know, bypass the early stages and create partial human parts of humans in dishes? And I must say I doubt that a cerebral organoid, that's what they call them, just brain tissue would have any kind of consciousness, or it doesn't seem true to nature of biology to me, but nonetheless, it does raise profound questions because we don't actually know what consciousness is. I mean, if you're honest about it, nobody knows. We don't know what it arises in. Most of us in science suspect that it's a molecular-mediated phenomenon at the very least, and yet we don't know the minimum construction of it. And so we're looking at a very, very complex future dilemmas from all this. And
I think I agree. I mean, organoids, you grow in a culture, they will never think, right? These mini brains or whatever, I agree. But I think it's interesting to do this in vivo, make chimeras. So make human mouse chimeras, which we're doing for certain questions, because we want to study human disease in an in vivo context. I don't have any problem with this, because it will be never human. But you go on, if you make human monkey chimeras, then it gets very complex, right? That's something I think will not be allowed, because then you don't know what you have, because there will be the integration of the human cells will be high, in mouse it's very low. They have too distant, but in monkeys they're close. So what is it? Something between a human and a monkey? So then I think you cross the line. And I don't think this will be allowed. But
I think...
So to end on a somewhat positive note, what the doctors are discussing here are, you know, they don't want to do experiments on human beings. You know, however you want to define that. And they're talking about consciousness. And that's where I think... Again, with AI, I think they'll run up against a roadblock and they won't be able, the singularity won't emerge because we just don't understand consciousness. It just won't happen. And on the other end, where talking about human beings, like where does consciousness begin? You know, when those are questions up in the air, why don't we just say, let's not risk it. Let's not experiment on human beings. Let's not do something where we could potentially be doing experimentations on human beings. Let's just not even go there. Because if you go there, as Dr. Ganesh himself pointed out, and as we see from Delegate Tran and the good governor of Virginia, that line becomes very difficult to draw, and it's no longer a slippery slope argument. If we allow this, then this is what's going to happen. It's happening. It happened in New York already. And they're proposing this now in Virginia. And again, the hope here is that, and again, I like where Dr. Ganesh is coming from in the sense that we don't want to do human experimentation. We don't want to experiment on human beings. That's the idea. That's the natural law argument, that it's immoral to do scientific experiments on human beings no matter what stage of life they're in. We have to be very, very careful that we're not doing that. And if we're going to be very, very careful, then let's just draw the line at, let's not, if there's a question, let's just not do it. But yet he's still comfortable with experimenting on embryos up to 14 days, which he's already said. So you see the inconsistencies here. You see the arbitrary, subjective proclamations of morality here. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And Holy Scripture is clear on this. It's simple. Thou shalt not murder. That's what Holy Scripture teaches us. Plain and simple. You know, if my son gets mad at me and wants to hit me in my head with a rock, not quite sure it's going to kill me or whatever, he already knows that's wrong. He might be justified in hitting me in the head with a rock. Sometimes I need that as a dad. But he knows that even if he's got questions about it, that Holy Scripture teaches him that if there's a question about it, you don't try to walk up to the line and say, well, we think we're staying on the other side of the line of this command, of this natural law revelation to us. No, Scripture, the natural revelation is there, and Scripture gives us the specifics, which says, just don't even mess with it. Don't play around with this. This is not something to be played with. And if you're doing this, you're wrong. You're outside of a proper ethical structure for human beings. And again, just the philosophical point here. I've already pointed out that you're not going to establish a morality that people are going to, that's going to work with this arbitrary, inconsistent, subjective approach to ethics. It's just not going to happen. We need an outside authority. That's why we need God. That's basically what I discovered when I started exploring atheism. I was like, wait a minute. Basically, I'm adopting some other authority for how I am to conduct my life. That's all you're doing. When you adopt another worldview, that's essentially all you're doing. You are switching your allegiance to a particular authority to another authority. And this is the really sad thing about human sinfulness. The main reason we do that is because there's something we want to do that we know is wrong, but we want an authority to tell us that it's okay. And again, biologists, neurobiologists are not exempt from this, unfortunately. They want to do these experiments because they think they can somehow cure human disease from it. Maybe they can make more discoveries to prolong life. And so therefore, they think it's valuable to sacrifice one life for another without that life that they're sacrificing's consent. Dr. Yanish talked a little bit about that. They want a system that they can develop themselves because they want to do whatever they want to do. And that's really where the crux of the problem lies. Okay, well, hopefully you get the idea there. Fairly interesting, frightening stuff going on right now. I think, again, what the Democratic Party in the United States is showing to us right now is that this thing is down the slippery slope and beyond it. And let's just cut the line. Just say, we're not going to tamper with human life no matter what. Okay, there's that heavy topic this week. Thanks for listening. Please donate your $50 to the Kenya Wall Project. Thanks everybody out there in Nebraska and at KNNA The Cross listening to us, and we'll see you next week.